It's a beautiful day and a fine time for healing. Podcast host Randy Fine, a narcissistic abuse expert and the author of the groundbreaking book Close Encounters of the Worst Kind and the captivating memoir Cliff Edge Road, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. Today's special guest, L.A. Villafane, her name is Lori, survived domestic abuse, but part of her was never the same. The trauma she suffered triggered something like dissociative identity disorder. Lori didn't confront her disorder until she created another person, this time on the page. In her book, The Other Gloria, Lori Villafane depicts her own struggle in a fictionalized tale in which an abuse survivor with dissociative identity disorder must confront her past in order to save herself and her daughters. While Gloria's struggle is unique, an element of her real-life survivor story will resonate with many people and many of my listeners. Overcoming manipulation, gaslighting, and domestic violence is a large part of her story. So I'd like to introduce you to her, and we're going to have a really fascinating show. Good morning, Lori, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. So I have read your book, The Other Gloria. Does this closely match, or is it identical to your story, your actual story?
It turned out to be more like my story than I intended it to be. But I was careful to make sure that the antagonist, Charles, was a different person than my ex.
Okay. I mean, he was pretty abusive. So your actual ex, what was different about him?
It just, his personality was different. Was more of the manipulator, verbal abuser. He would get drunk and restrain me, but there was no hitting or anything like that.
Okay.
Because I made the mistake of telling him that if he hit me, I would leave. So he never hit me. He never crossed that line.
Right. And we all know, many of my listeners are abuse sufferers or survivors, we all know that we don't ever tell our abuser that we're going to leave. We don't give them that information. So I understand. Why don't you tell us your story? There's some twists and turns in the story, but generally what this story is about.
Basically, Gloria has had the unfortunate run-in with something that she doesn't understand. She finds herself with a head injury and fading away. And the next thing she knows is that she's waking up next to her dangerous ex-husband, who for years abused her. And she has no idea how she got there. And she comes to find out that what she's woken up to is her past, and she's living the abuse all over again. But this time she wants to make a difference in her life and the life of her two young daughters and try to escape from him sooner. In the past, she had escaped from him after 20 years of marriage. And so she wants to save herself and her daughters and she starts making a plan to escape from him, but it's going to be dangerous. She knows that she's going to have to meet that other part of herself that she's never met, which is the other Gloria, which she calls the other Gloria, in order to help her to leave safely. And meeting that other part of herself may prove to be more dangerous than anything.
So what is the difference between Gloria and the other Gloria?
The other Gloria is the I guess you would say, the person who takes over during severe times of stress. And she is just like, that. All of the emotion is gone. And she takes everything very stoically, just endures and has no emotion attached to it. But she has all these memories that Gloria doesn't have of the abuse. So Gloria's not really sure, you know, about meeting her. She's afraid to meet her because she knows that she has all these memories.
So wouldn't that be comforting? Because, you know, to find, doesn't, I mean, there must be a curiosity to find out,
yes,
you know, what this is all about. But I guess it is,
yes,
frightening to not know what your past is and to hear about it. Because you,
yes,
suspect that there's some things in there that you really would rather not have known about, right?
That is true. Some very terrible things. And in my case, I've had glimpses, and it's so frightening. It's I commend anyone who goes through the ordeal of digging these things up in therapy. I, unfortunately, in my past, have tended to run away from it once it starts coming up. But when I started writing, I was having to deal with things. And I would have to put the writing away for a while I dealt with these horrible things that would come up. And sometimes I would have to put it away for weeks and before I could come back to it until I processed what had just happened to me. And I had never had that in therapy because I would always run away. So doing this book helped me to face things that I've run away from all my life.
It is very cathartic to write a book about your life. Why did you choose to fictionalize it?
I tried to make a memoir, and the words just wouldn't come, and I finally found that if I wrote about someone else, although she ended up being more like me than I wanted her to be, it was easier for me just to say, this is someone else, and I can detach myself enough from it that I can handle it, if that makes any sense.
It makes a lot of sense, actually. It really does. There are, I think, trying to remember, like three times in the book where you end up in a place where you don't know how you got there. In the beginning of the book, you talk about how you're driving and you have blood all over you. And you have no idea how you got where you were, why you were driving where you are, and why you were soaked in blood.
Right.
And you clear that up at the end.
Yes.
Are you comfortable talking about what happened?
Yes.
What really happened?
I've really worked through with this book. I have really worked through things, and this is the first time in my life that I can talk about it.
That's amazing. Oh, congratulations. What an achievement and what a relief. It must have been very hard to pull this all together. So what actually happened?
What actually happened was, I was abused as a child sexually, and then I was told it was my fault. that was my first experience at 5 years old of dissociation. And I didn't have a lot of problem with it as I was growing up. I did have some, but I guess I was so damaged that I attracted this really terrible narcissist to me, and I felt like, you know, a perfect prey now that I look back on it. And he made me empathize with him. He, at first, I thought he was empathizing with me, and he lured me in, and he convinced me and he convinced my parents to allow me to marry him at 16 years old. And at 16, you're still developing. So he was more like a father figure to me. He was 4 years older. He was already graduated, had a job. And so I just basically went into this as a child. And he pretty much molded me into what he wanted as a wife. But no matter how much I tried, I always made him miserable, and it was always my fault. And I was beginning to just dissociate completely to, after 4 years after I was married to him, I started having my two daughters. I had my first daughter, and then 4 years later, I had my second daughter. And I have only flashes and glimpses of memories of their years growing up, which I am so ashamed of still. But because I was having to dissociate so much just to survive, that's what happened. And unfortunately, it took me over 20 years later to finally get myself out of the situation.
And so the blood came from where?
That is a fictionalized,
fictionalized
that part of the story.
Okay.
Yes. Actually, the physical abuse that I endured was he would restrain me and yell in my, restrain me while he was yelling in my face.
Right.
And also restrain me for sex.
Wow.
And,
oh, my gosh, that's horrible.
Yes. And I felt like I always had this thought in my head, please just hit me. Just hit me so I can leave.
Right.
Actually told to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
No, I wanted to hear what you have to say.
that was actually told to me by my parents, that the only way you leave is if he hits you.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So that was really ingrained in me.
Boy, our parents can really mess us up with messages that they plant in us.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
as someone who counsels other people who are in narcissistic abusive relationships, and I've counseled hundreds, and I've heard everything. And I'm also the daughter of a narcissistic mother, so I understand what it's like. I grew up that way. So we all kind of feel like what you said, because nobody believes us when we talk about what has happened to us. We have nothing to show, and the abuser puts on a different face for everybody else.
Oh, they are such chameleons.
Yes. Yes, and it's maddening. It is absolutely crazy-making. So I get it. I get the frustration. Is there a big difference between you and the other Gloria, and does she still exist?
I have to say that she's pretty much, I wanted to make her someone else, but I didn't even realize what I did when I named her. that my name is in the middle of her name. So as much as I tried to make her different, she's not.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. You spell your name L-O-R-I?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, isn't that amazing?
That was totally subliminal. And someone pointed it out to me. I didn't even notice it myself.
Incredible. Incredible. What exactly? Now, we talked about this before we went on air, and you said that you don't feel like you fit fully into the diagnosis of dissociative identity disorder. So why don't you explain that? Because we didn't get a chance to really talk about that.
Right. I don't want to take away from people that have full-on dissociative identity disorders where they have, more than one personality. I've just always identified with that's just another part of me. It's not a totally separate person. But it's just another part of me that I don't have access to. So I didn't want to be identifying with maybe some niche that I didn't fit into.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I do or if I don't. I've never met anyone with dissociative identity disorder, so I don't know, and I don't know if I'm relating it properly.
Okay. But were you diagnosed with it by your psychiatrist or psychologist?
I was diagnosed with dissociative disorder. They never used the identity part, but we always talked about the other me, you know. So
dissociative disorder rather than dissociative identity disorder. There's a distinction there,
yes.
Right?
It's what I was diagnosed with. So, I think there's just a technicality there, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I've tried to read on the subject, and I'm still struggling in my mind, you know.
It's, you know, this is like amnesia almost, you know, where you just are missing whole chunks of your life. That has to be so bizarre. How much of it has come back to you? I know you're getting glimpses. Does it continue to come back to you?
Yes, you know, I might just be driving down the road and then I get a flash, a glimpse of something. And sometimes it's only the feeling, flashback of a feeling. And I recognize the feeling, the horrible feeling, as something that has happened to me. So then I try to work through trying to get a memory to go with it. Sometimes I do get a memory. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just have the feeling. But I've noticed if I don't get the memory, the feeling keeps coming back. And that happened to me so much while I was writing the book. And I think it took me a year to write the book, or just to write the first draft, because I was having so much of this happening. But I still cannot recover the memories of my daughter's growing up, which is, it's just, it kills me.
At what age, what age were they when you began to really know them in a more conscious way?
I think my oldest was 20 and my youngest was 16.
Okay. So you lost a lot of years.
Yes. Yes, I really only know them as pretty much adults. And but they tell me, you know, things that have happened. And you know how you can look at a picture and you can have a memory, but you don't know if the memory is because you saw the picture or if it's a real memory.
Okay.
that's kind of how it is with me. I'm not sure if I'm really remembering or if I'm just, if they're just snapshots in my head that I'm making now because of what they're telling me.
Right.
But right. I do appreciate knowing the things that they're telling me.
So did they feel any loss, or were you a good mother all along?
They tell me I was a good mother. I apologize to them all the time, and they reassure me all the time that I was a good mother. But I do feel a lot of guilt for not getting them out of the situation at an early age, because they had to deal with their father.
Right. Well, guilt is something that we all survivors feel, especially when we have children. It's
yes.
very difficult, you know, because we feel we are so responsible for the children.
Yes.
But you pulled yourself together when you could. You did the best that you could. And, you know, many parents fail to take into consideration is that our children come into this world with their own journey, their own challenges, and we can't really interfere with that. We want to save our children. We feel responsible for our children. But they do have their own journeys, and they do have their own challenges and things that they have to work through. So if that takes any of the guilt away, you know, I hope so. But I can understand it. But healing is forgiving yourself. And until
yeah.
you can stop saying things like this to yourself, you can't really heal. Because you have to really
right.
love every aspect of yourself. And so pay attention to what you are saying to yourself and challenge it and say something
right.
different. Don't let the record
right.
play. Right?
Right. Right.
I'm right.
definitely still on a journey. It's
right.
I've not reached the destination. I'm still on a journey. And
right.
I appreciate hearing that. I really do.
Yes. So it's, you know, there is a record that plays in our head. Sometimes it goes round and round and round. And some of the things we say to ourselves and some of the things we believe are not relevant to today. And we need to understand that just because, you know, we allow our mind to control us instead of us controlling our mind, that's the difference. That's where mindfulness
yeah.
comes in, okay? So
yeah.
pay attention to what you're saying to yourself and be very good to yourself. And when you can
right.
do that, so much healing will happen. This is just so interesting. I know that dissociation is one of the things that happens in trauma. There's many ways that we deal with horrible things. Why do you think, maybe you don't know, but why do you think you dissociated instead of choosing another way?
It was the only avenue for me. I think I felt as a child with a narcissistic father and a mother who resented having me. Just escaping was the only thing. You know, I guess just escape was the only way I could cope with the absence of nurturing and affirmation or anything like that. And then being told that, you know, you're at fault for your own rape. All I could do was escape. That's all I felt I could do.
You know, what's interesting is the way you escaped is actually a better way than the narcissist escapes, because the narcissist, the child growing up in an environment sometimes becomes a narcissist because they take on a pseudo-identity and hide behind it for the rest of their life. They're very conscious of who they are, but they go out into life with a different persona, something that protects them. And when they do that, they never can heal from that.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that you chose, or your subconscious chose, to deal with it is actually a healthier way, because you can heal that, and you don't have a personality disorder for the rest of your life. You can bring that together.
Right. I think I've always been really sensitive, and especially sensitive to others. I'm very empathetic, and I care so much for people. I just think my personality couldn't have gone that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's generally what it is. You know, the sensitive child will dissociate or use things like pleasing to control their environment and give them some kind of emotional safety.
I did that as well. I was always trying to please, but it never worked, you know.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's very temporary, you know. It buys you, you know, a couple minutes of maybe, you know, a little bit of calmness, but it doesn't last. It's not real. And, you know, you said you're very empathetic. Are you also empathic?
I am empathic.
Okay. And the reason I ask you that is because every person I've ever worked with, including myself, who has grown up with narcissistic parents, is empathic. And the reason is because when you live in an environment that's emotionally unpredictable, your sensitivity to energy becomes heightened.
Right.
Because you don't know what's coming at any given minute, so you're always on high alert. Mm-hmm. And you can almost feel something happening before it happens. So we grow up with this empathic sensitivity, and it's kind of interesting. So, that might explain that.
I have a dilemma that I'm living with now with the empathic part, in that I'm helping to take care of my parents who both have dementia, and I walk into the room and I just feel like I want to walk right back out. I'm having really having trouble with their caregiving because I never got taken care of, I think.
I understand. Well,
and
I'm available to help you. I'm available to help you if you ever want that kind of help, because this is what I deal with all the time. But anyway,
I'm going to take you up on that.
Okay. You know, and you may want to pick up a copy of my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind.
I have the title written down right in front of me. That was my next step after this call.
Perfect. It has a lot of great information for you. So the other Gloria, or Lori, Lori.
Right.
Where did she go?
She's in hiding right now. I'm in a very stable, very caring relationship with a very caring, wonderful man, and I don't get triggered very much anymore. So right now she's hiding away. Are you still there? Hello?
I'm going, okay. I'm going to, we both got, there she is. Okay, awesome. We both got dropped.
I think we dropped.
Lori, okay.
Yeah.
We both, our calls got dropped. That was very strange.
I saw that.
Yeah, I was not in the queue, and yeah. Okay. Do you remember where we left off?
I don't. I think I was just saying that she's in hiding right now because I'm in a loving and stable relationship with a man who's very gentle with me. And I'm thankful for that.
Oh, you should be thankful. That's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
I'm not triggered.
Now, have you learned, what tools have you been given or have you learned to help you not dissociate when something feels uncomfortable?
I do a lot of trying to do meditation, deep breathing. Once I can feel the feelings now, I know the feelings coming on, the shot of adrenaline, just the physical feelings that I start to feel before I start to dissociate. And then I catch myself as I'm dissociating, which I never did before, which is a strange sensation because once I had in the past, I would never have a recall of actually dissociating. So this is new to me, too, of the actual feeling of dissociation. So I'm,
what else does it feel like? Do you feel like you're disappearing? Do you feel like you're being erased? Like, what is the feeling like?
I start to feel very numb. And if someone is talking to me, and it usually is at a point when someone is talking to me, and something comes up that's hard to handle, they start to sound very far away. And I feel like I'm up in the corner of the room. But at other times, I feel like I'm the smallest person inside my body, and I'm hearing things from a great distance. So I have two different feelings of how I go.
So dealing with or coping with horrific feelings or horrific memories and everything like that is largely about allowing them, isn't it?
Yes.
Allowing the feelings, yes, and doing this in a safe environment or in a safe way or with a safe person.
Yes.
Where you can allow that
husband,
feeling.
Yes, after I have these sensations, my husband is there to talk over what has just happened, and we try to figure out why I was triggered, and he is a very good sounding board.
How lucky you are. Now, you talk about a Rick in your book, and it's interesting how you weave him into the story. Is there any truth to the fact, well, in your book, you go back into time, okay?
Right.
And you meet him as a young man. But you end up with him as a husband. Did you remember getting married? Did you remember marrying him?
Yes, I remember everything.
Okay.
It was a year, I met Rick, I called him Rick. I met Larry a year after I left my ex-husband, and we were married 3 years later. And since I've met Larry, I've remembered most everything.
And in the book, Rick had a daughter, Megan, right?
Yes.
So does Larry have a daughter as well?
Yes, he does.
Okay. So you're one big happy family with three girls?
I wouldn't say that. we've got our problems, you know, as a blended family. And his daughter has a hard time accepting me as a stepmother. She's very loyal to her mother, and she feels like it would be dishonoring her mother to accept me into her life. So we have that difficulty.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, in the book, she adores you. So there's a difference there. So I guess you were able to play that out in fiction the way, the ideal way that it could be.
Yes, I guess it's very much something that I wish could happen. Not how it happened, but that I wish that we could be, you know, this happy family, this happy blended family.
Right.
But, I understand her. I understand where she's coming from.
Right. It's difficult for children. Very, very difficult when they have to divide their loyalties and. You know, in situations with narcissists, I mean, you are so very lucky to have your children and have a good relationship with your children, because in most cases there is parental alienation, and the narcissist ruins the relationship you have with the children. So the fact that you still have a good relationship with your children is wonderful. Do they still see their father?
No. He actually moved away, and he doesn't even contact them.
Okay.
He just moved away and started a new life. And that's very damaging to both of them.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they could probably use some support with that as well. And I am available as well. Often I will work with one person, and then they'll say, will you please work with my children? Because everyone is damaged, you know? And it is very sad. No matter how abusive or, you know, whatever, verbally abusive, whatever, a parent is, children still want that parent. They want the love. They want it more than the love that they have from the parent who's good, you know, offering them true love. So I get it. That's a tough thing for the girls.
Yes, and I think it took them till their late 20s to really realize, hey, I'm trying to have a relationship with someone who is never going to have the relationship back. So I need to let go. And they each did that, I think, about their late 20s.
Well, that's
and,
a big step. That's a big step. It still gnaws at you, you know, inside. How have their adult relationships been? Well, you have a 16-year-old. She doesn't have adult relationships yet. But what is choosing?
No. Actually, they're in their 30s now.
Okay.
Both of them.
Okay.
My oldest daughter has difficulty. She married two narcissists.
Okay.
And now she's in a relationship. Her boyfriend is such a sweet person.
He is such
a sweet person. And my younger daughter has been in a stable relationship for about 15 years now.
That is so good to hear. You're so fortunate in that, you know.
Yes.
It doesn't normally happen. So, you know, you have a lot to be grateful for with that. Especially that your older daughter pulled herself out of it. Most people who are raised with narcissistic parents don't really wake up to it until they're like 30 or 40 or 50. You know, but I think that what they saw you go through probably help them to see it more, even though they didn't really want to see it, but they could, you know, it wasn't like you were telling them something that they didn't see, right?
Right, definitely.
Right, right. And in many cases, the children don't see it because it's very subtle, and then they don't believe the parent that's been abused. So
right.
So there is some light in this darkness that I can offer
right.
you. Yeah.
Yes.
So what else did you want to tell us about this book?
It was such a, so cathartic to write, even though it was difficult. And the other thing is, if I could give it away, I would, because I feel like the response I'm getting from the people that give me reviews and call me and write me that have read the book, it's been enlightening for them. Just seeing the narcissistic relationship and the damage and what it can do and, you know, how long someone might stay, or maybe it could be the catalyst for someone to say, hey, this sounds familiar. Maybe I should think about this relationship that I'm in. You know, even though it's a work of fiction, I've had the feedback that's been helping people.
That's wonderful. It's a gift. You know, books are, they're really given to us. They're often, you know, often we are given. You know, I mean, I'm a very spiritual person, so I believe in these kind of things. But I believe that books are really
yes.
given to us, and for a reason. We're chosen to write them for a reason. And I'm happy
yeah.
to hear that it's helping other people wake up. You know, it's interesting what you said. I'm just, when the show ends, I'm getting ready to publish an article on my website about why it's so hard to leave a narcissistic abuser. Because there are many reasons why people stay, and it's scary to get away from these people.
Yes.
And it's very difficult because they have ways of sucking you back in. Every time you get away, they suck you back in. So it's just difficult. So I write a lot on my website, randyfine.com, a lot of articles about narcissistic abuse. Since this is my focus in life, you know, this is what's been dropped in my lap, and I'm happy to be an advocate for it. I'm very happy to be an advocate for it. Yeah, so it is wonderful to write this book. So we're talking about, her name is Lori, but she goes under the pen name of L.A. Villafane, and it's The Other Gloria, a gripping psychological thriller, which it is. It's one of those books that you just keep reading and reading and reading. You don't want to put down because you don't want to stop. It just keeps going and going. The episodes keep going and going, and you just kind of want to follow through with them. So I highly recommend it. And you know, that's pretty much it. Did you want to leave us with any kind of message, or I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, I do have a message that I like to relay to people. And it may seem like this is something that is different from what we've been talking about, but this is something that has been a problem for me. And I want to just portray that sometimes the best gift you can give a person is to simply listen and make them feel as if they have truly been heard and understood. And that is what has been missing in my life.
If you could see my face, you could see that I am grinning from ear to ear hearing that. That is a great message, and it is something we all wish. It's why I work so hard at what I do, because I want people to understand what survivors have gone through and learn how to talk to them, learn how to respond to them, just to listen, you know, not
yeah.
to judge, just to listen and validate. So that's a wonderful,
yeah.
wonderful message. I really appreciate you saying that. And for those of you out there who have not gone through this, definitely, definitely heed that message, because you will help a lot of people. You don't have to relate to what somebody is telling you to be, to lend an ear, to be a good listener, and not judge. So I'm all for
that's
that.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Just, you know, and, you know, and like I told my husband, you know, you'll never understand what I went through. You'll never be able to relate to it.
Right.
Just support me, but just support me. That's all I ask.
Right.
You don't have to understand it. Just support me.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, we need support and validation. And luckily you found a man who does that for you, and I'm so happy for you.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate talking to you today.
Yeah, thanks. I really enjoy talking to you, too. So, all right, well, that's about it. Your book is available everywhere?
Yes, online everywhere. I'm working on getting it into the bookstores. It's at barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. It's also available in audiobook. So, yeah,
okay.
Just wherever they sell books.
Okay, perfect. And do you have a website or a place we can go to for more information about you or to contact you?
Yes, my email is theothergloria@gmail.com if someone would like to contact me. And my website is theothergloria, and it's /book.
Theothergloria/book.com. Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest in it. I thank you so much for being my guest today. I have a feeling we'll be talking more about this.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, read the book or books. Cliff Edge Road, I just published that recently. That is my memoir of my story and what narcissistic childhood abuse set me up for. So... it has a very happy ending as well.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's Cliff Edge Road. Anyway, have a wonderful day. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. You as well. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. We are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Visit randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com, and be sure to sign up to receive updates on the latest blog posts, events, and upcoming shows. Thank you for listening.